Welcome to Aspire Higher Health and Fitness. We are a fitness and lifestyle company that takes a holistic approach to achieve a better you. Aspire Higher Health and Fitness is about overcoming. What does overcoming mean? It means overcoming the obstacles life throws at you. We are here to help you get out of your own way. Bust down those barriers, break through any and all limitations. Follow us each week as we discuss how to level up your life. Welcome back, everybody. This is Vijay Prasad with Aspire Higher Health and Fitness. And of course, I am joined by
Tracy Abelson.
And once again, we have our returning guest received by actually popular demand, Mr. Dan Tatton. Thank you for joining us again today.
Thanks, Vijay.
And I'm not going to lie, folks. So this is actually a second recording on this one because I started recording the wrong browser and totally screwed that up and was like, hey, let's just keep talking. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, I'm in the wrong thing. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Dan, we're going to have to redo all of that. So this is actually technically a welcome back again because I'm an idiot.
We didn't get all the good stuff.
Yeah, luckily we didn't get into all the good stuff yet. We were actually just starting. So that was luck that saved me there this time. All right, so as I had already told everybody, but you haven't heard yet because I'm restarting again, but so today we're going to be going through a bunch of different facets here because we're going to go kind of a span of physical versus mental health. We're going older generation versus younger generation. We got a lot that we're actually going to cover on this one today. It's a diverse field and there's lots to say about it. So we're going to actually get right into it. And I'm actually going to start off on more of a heavier topic. Sometimes can be a little bit on the controversial side because it just depends on which side of the fence you fall on. But physical health versus mental health. So, of course, there's a correlation between the two. You want to be hand in hand with each. They're both extremely important. But we live in a very busy society and busy world nowadays. And because of this, unfortunately, sometimes something's got to give. And a lot of the time, almost majority of the time, it is the mental health aspect that tends to suffer. But then, of course, even with that, if the mental health aspect goes down, well, we tend to get into that upset mode, which makes us feel tired that we don't want to do the physical aspect. So you can see how that can downward spiral.
Yeah, I have fallen into this trap myself. I've suffered from anxiety and depression in the past, and when that kicks in, you don't always want to keep up with the physical fitness side of things because, well, you just don't feel like it. And unfortunately, if you do keep up with it, well, fortunately, I should say, if you do keep up with the physical fitness side of things, it helps you get back on track on the mental side that much faster. It is hard to do, but you really, really, really have to push yourself and know to get out the door, get that workout in, because it's going to help you turn around and get out of that funk that much faster.
And if you've been someone who's been active all your life, it's much easier as you get older to stay physically active. But of course, there's some folks who are getting into it a little bit later in the game to try to start focusing on their health, which is excellent for you guys because that is fantastic that you're making that plunge if you're doing it later in life because it is a little bit harder. Now, Dan, you are just launching this new program for the 55 plus demographic. And so let's get right into that, starting off with this one. What do you find is a big benefit for the older population as they're getting into this?
Okay, yeah, we just launched our 55 plus movement mastery program, which has been really well received by that demographic as it moves them away from what we talked about maybe in the last episode when it comes from traditional fitness, more towards exercise for health and moving for longevity. So we're trying to teach people how to move that'll keep them moving for a long time and doing the activities they love as they age.
I love that word longevity because that's ultimately we do this to improve our health, but not just for the sake of a longer term, but also a more efficient longer term. And
that's right.
With your, yeah. Actually, because we've briefly touched on it, but if you could actually give me a little detail on how the 55 plus program works.
So our 55 plus program, it's a 20 week program. And right now we have the first 2 weeks up on the platform. And it's of course, so it's programmed by the incredible incredible John Sinclair, who's part of Seven Movements, a great exercise guy, as you know. And the way we have it set it up is we actually move people through tissue preparation in week one into movement preparation. Then week three, we move them into what we call in the biz, maybe functional training or balance training. And then in week four, it's again, we look at function and almost more performance. And then we just cycle that through every 4 weeks.
Okay.
So when someone goes through the program, the idea is they gain total body movement mastery. So in the first 4 weeks, we're focusing on the hips and bending at the hips. Something pretty common to that age demographic is being important to be able to bend down and do things. And then we progress them through different movement patterns as we work through the 20 weeks. So the idea is at the end of the 20 weeks, that person's going to have the tools to take care of their body, practice self-care, and be able to move well doing the activities they love. And maybe just to move back to your original point, that connection between kind of mental fitness and physical fitness, I think what we're trying to do at Seven Movements anyways is frame up physical exercise in a way that's more palatable for certain people.
And when you say just going into that first week of how that works, especially now if you're getting an older population just starting brand new into it, now you get someone who might feel a little upset because they can't move as well as they thought they could. I think we even talked about that in the last podcast as well. But someone who's like, I thought I was better than I was. That is the first week, that concept of tissue preparation is actually, I love the sound of it. So I actually want to hear a little more about that first week, especially.
Sure. Yeah, that's easy. So John uses this technique that we call rub and scrub that I think he borrowed from a group called the Institute of Motion, which is another great company working on in this space. And basically what you're doing is just hydrating the tissues and trying to make them a little more malleable for movement.
Okay.
So what's really cool about seeing people go through the rub and scrub when say they haven't really done much physical exercise at all and they're just starting out is, you know, from a training perspective, they're usually pretty rigid folks. Usually those soft tissues are pretty locked in place and they don't move that well. And it's amazing to see what a 7 minute rub and scrub routine on certain joints in a particular order will do to help them just start moving better.
In an older population, what I tend to notice a lot of in terms of the restricted motion, it tends to be, from what I always see, is through the hips and especially through like the scapular traction.
Yeah.
So folks, for those listening who are not sure what scapular traction is, like just pulling your shoulders back, pull your shoulders back and down. So you think of your shoulder blades pinching together, like that kind of thing. So in other words, posturally speaking, is they tend to be a little more rounded.
So that's what we're really focusing on. And that week one is really interesting because people are setting up to do an exercise program. And all of a sudden in week one, they've got John in front of them doing rub and scrub on the joints. And they're like, well, what's this all about?
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, like, what are we doing? But the interesting thing is at the beginning of each video, we do a movement test. So okay. in week one, we just do it. Simple toe touch, right?
Okay, yeah.
And at the end of the 7 minutes, we retest. And it's actually quite interesting. I was doing one the other day for the 55 plus, even though I don't quite fit in that category yet. that I was impressed at the range of motion increase that I got just from doing tissue preparation. I didn't do anything other than some rub and scrub around my hips and lower back area through the arms, shoulders, elbows, all that kind of stuff.
And it still falls in the, so you said it still falls in the 7 minute time limit.
Yeah, everything falls in that 7 minutes. Everything on take seven is 7 minutes at a time.
Okay. And then we actually, again, going back to the, so folks, if you haven't listened to our last podcast, some of the things we will be referencing from there as well, because it all comes together. But we were talking about this the last time, the fact that setting those shorter term goals to kind of give you that more of a motivational push. So that alone makes sense in the sense of you start at the beginning of 7 minutes, then by the end of 7 minutes, so just a very short term, you're already seeing a result.
Yeah, it's really interesting and cool to see people eyes light up when they're like, oh, okay, I can do this. Versus, I know I've seen people come into the gym and you know they've never exercised before and they pound through an hour long workout and you see it in their eyes when they're like, there's no way I'm going to be able to keep doing this every day. Right. So I think that's a big piece of it is making exercise, making fitness, making physical fitness more palatable for a greater segment of the population.
Now, aiming back at our concept of this question, essentially, which is the mental aspect. So as you were saying, you see the change of someone, especially it would be elating to someone who is not used to moving, that after 7 minutes, they all of a sudden, basically not to say instantly, but almost instantly, have an increased range of motion. So obviously that is going to have a direct effect on their mental health. Agreed?
I agree completely.
And with that, what would you say is the biggest mental change you would see in that 7 minute push?
That's actually quite an interesting question, and it's tough to say because it's going to depend on the individual.
Right.
But I'd say just from a general standpoint, when people are able to see feel some success right away in their body, it's a powerful motivator because we can see that this thing that we're doing or this task that we're taking on is resulting in something. So that's positive for their mental well-being. And then of course there's the hundreds of or thousands of things that are good for your mental health that physical activity just brings in general. And I think that people just giving something a try can see a big difference from something like that.
I would think for that segment of the population too, while we're talking about the 55 plus, like that can be a group that is especially prone to depression because you're getting older. Like if you're not keeping up with the physical activity and things are breaking down, that can be depressing for people. Plus it can be a lonely period of time in your life for a lot of people. So I would think that just keeping moving for that segment will be that much more important going forward.
Totally. And I love working with that demographic of people from a training perspective because they tend to have a better outlook on exercise in general. They're not caught up so much in the image piece and the feeding the ego piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some of that going on, but once folks hit 55 and get into their 60s, they start thinking about longevity and they start thinking about, hey, I want to spend my 70s and 80s walking around and doing things that I like doing, not with a walker or in a wheelchair. And they start thinking in that matter. So they become a lot easier to motivate and easier to work with when we're just talking about getting them moving for that long-term goal.
Now I'm going to kind of go to the other side of the fence on this one now, as opposed to more physical. I'm going to aim a little more mental as I ask this question. When we talk about the obvious physical effects and how it mentally changes a person, would you say, because I have my own thoughts on this, but I like hearing your opinions because I know they can be very strong. But would you say that people with physical ailments tend to be more well received in terms of getting help than someone with mental or someone needing more mental assistance? Now, what I'm talking about is using things like depression and anxiety. Would you say resources are more available with someone who has depression and anxiety, or would you say someone who has bone and joint issues, who gets more help?
Right, it's a great question. I think even better question would be, who asks for more help? I actually think a lot of the resources are there, and we're not accessing them as much as we probably should be on the mental health side of things. But I think traditionally speaking, or thinking about the past, it's always been easier to get help with your physical ailments, because they're right there and easy to see.
Especially in this day and age, like right now, as I was saying earlier, with things being so hustle bustle, so go, 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 mental health is suffering. And it almost seems like, to me, that the resources are not as available as they should be. And when I say not, I'm not saying that they're not there, but for physical, like you look at Alberta Healthcare, it covers so much. Insurances from work companies, benefits, things like that cover so much for physical issues. But if a person needs to go talk to a counselor, they get, what is it, 6 visits a year?
Sometimes not even. It depends on your plan.
Right.
You get coverage, like sometimes you get coverage for a certain amount, a certain percentage, whatever. It's not necessarily a certain amount of visits or anything, but they're really, unless you have coverage,
mm-hmm.
there isn't a lot of resources that people can access that don't have a cost associated to them.
And the shitty thing is there's also such a waiting list, like that one person who, she was needing help for, I forget what the issue was, but then they're like, we can get to you in October. And I think she was trying to contact them in like February.
It's a friend of mine that she was just doing research in Nova Scotia. I don't know if it's the same way in all provinces, but the wait list there to see and speak to somebody was something like 340 days.
Like a year.
Yeah, basically.
Right. So, I mean,
yeah, that's a problem.
Right. Exactly. Right. Like that's a problem. So physical health makes a difference in assisting mental health and vice versa. But the thing is, what happens when physical health is taken care of, but the mental health resources are just not there? Now, how do we fix that? And I'll pose this question to you, Dan, as well as everyone out there. And I definitely want to hear your feedback on this. So please throw me your feedback on this. I'm going to ask you this question. I'm going to set up a scenario first. So I'll use a younger kid, for example. So someone in school, you have, say, a young boy, he's in school, he acts out, he's belligerent, he's yelling at his teachers, getting into trouble in school, things like that. You know, so not behaving well. Initially people are thinking, okay, he's just, you know, a bad kid, which is an unfortunate way to look at that, because usually there's another issue. But just to set up the scenario, his parents take him to the hospital and find out he's got a tumor that's been affecting his behavior. How do you think of him now, knowing that, as opposed to how he's behaving before, now you know, okay, he has a tumor in his head that's affecting his behavior. How do you think of him now, knowing this? That's only the first part of this question. So how do you think of him now that you know, okay, he has this tumor in his head and that's affecting his behavior? So I'm going to flip the scenario a little bit. Same thing with his behavior in school, same thing with how he's acting and doing everything. His parents go to look for help. They find out, oh, looks like he's got an anxiety disorder. How do you think of him now? To me, and I'm guilty of this, so I'll admit it, initially I'm like, well, the tumor takes precedence. But that's not right, nor is it fair, because the other disorder is equally as dangerous, no?
It's an interesting...
Did that go deep? everybody went silent on me there. They're like, whoa.
I think it's...
I knew where you were going with the question. And I think it's a good way to make an excellent point, in that that maybe we aren't giving some of the mental health issues out there the same level of what would you call it? I'm at a loss for words, but I think people know what I'm saying.
I think the physical, the physical stuff would take precedence, because they're going to want to get to that right away. And then the mental health side of it, I don't think people are going to ignore that. I just think that's not something you fix with one surgery or whatever. Like, it's a long-term longer term solution.
Right.
So is for the longer term solution, as we know, the resources, yes, they're there, but they're not as easily, I'll say it that way, is they're not as easily available. So I would think that we need to make a push towards getting more resources for people who require more mental health assistance.
I think so.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah, and I think this, I don't know if more people are suffering from mental health issues or if it's just that we're starting to pay attention more now. Like me personally, I think more people are suffering from it just because of the way society's evolving and we have all of this technology at our fingertips, but we're isolating ourselves more and more, but that's a whole other podcast.
Actually, it's not, because I'm saying it this way, because as everybody's going to listen to right now, I'm going to be very clever here as I segue into the next part of, as I said, we're going through a lot of different facets today. Physical education for kids in school, and you're going to be like, well, what do you mean? How's the segue? What's the transition here that's going to connect? Well, the thing is, with kids in school nowadays, so physical education becomes an option once you leave elementary, you get into high school, then it's, you can choose to take it. We live in a society that is more digitally based. People are more on platforms that involve phones, computers, iPads, and tablets and things like that. They're isolated more, and I would say mental health is suffering more now that people are so much more isolated, even though they're so much more connected. You see how clever I was there with my segue?
Well, and you know what? I push back on you guys a little bit on the fact that that things are necessarily worse now for mental health challenges. I think I'm just thinking back into history and thinking about some of the mental health challenges. For example, let me give you a really good example. Mm-hmm. The guys coming back from World War II, right?
Yeah.
You know, they had zero mental health supports, really.
Right.
But
yeah.
I guarantee they came back with a lot of mental health issues.
Yes.
And problems, but they likely just weren't recognized or cared about. So I actually think from a societal perspective, we're doing a much better job today.
Okay.
And part of it is that we're creating some space for people to talk about mental health. We're doing a pretty good job of that, especially in recent years. We're getting better. I'd say maybe we're not right where we need to be, but we're improving. And I mean, we're actually diagnosing this stuff now, and there's professionals who are looking at this and diagnosing it amongst the population, whereas I don't think that happened throughout history. I mean, the further back you go, the less it would have been diagnosed.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was way, way less. And as we progress, we are more cognizant of what's going on. So So we were just talking about the 55 plus demographic. Now I'm taking it to the more high school age demographic. Sure. However, the correlation is still here in that as physical education in school, it becomes an option for kids. If they didn't have the option, if they are forced to do it more in their youth, I would say it's more likely they would keep those good behaviors, whereas now that it's not being enforced, and in fact, it's being pushed that, you know, kids, they have to have a tablet in school or a computer in school to do schoolwork. They don't really have books anymore. So being that it is an option, wouldn't it be safe to say that we should be also making a push in the physical health aspect to bring back PE as a mandatory subject?
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm not a PE teacher, but I'm trained as one and have worked as a physical education teacher. So I have strong opinions on this. And one is, I agree with you that we need more physical education in the schools. I don't know if we need more of how it is currently being taught.
Okay. How would you change or advance it?
Well, one, we need more unstructured play in schools. So we need people just having time to go and move.
Right.
And then going back to why we started Take 7 in the first place is that we know, research is clear on this now, that frequent movement throughout the day is as important, if not more important, than 1 hour bouts of exercise here and there. We won't be able to combat the negative effects of sedentary behaviors by lumping in a big chunk of exercise throughout the day. So I think physical education and physical activity needs to be more integrated throughout the school day and throughout the actual curriculum itself.
I like that, actually. I like that a lot, because it does, you're right. It's kind of like the whole nutrition versus exercise thing, whereas, yeah, you spend an hour working out, but if you eat like crap for the whole day, well, it's not as beneficial as it should be. Whereas, like you're saying, if you move more through the day, as opposed to just 1 hour through the day, well, yeah, you're going to be more beneficial because you're going to be mobile all day long. Whereas, as we know, you stay still too long, you get stiff. There's a reason.
Yeah. I mean, we have kids, for example, you know, in their classrooms for 2-3 hours at a time, just sitting there. And then in between classes, they go out into the hallway and they sit down and look down at their phones for 10-15 minutes. And then if they have taken the physical education course, then they go to the gym and go play a sport of some sort that they're learning that day.
And the other thing with that too, now going into the whole concept of, you know, a physical education class, the problem nowadays more so is that there's, I think, did we talk about this time? I think we might have, but the thing is, you look at jungle gyms and parks outside, nowadays they're empty all the time. Kids are not outside playing, which to me is now suggesting that if you have physical education as a class and that class is an option and they opt out of it, they're getting no activity.
No, that's a good point too. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with physical education classes and making them mandatory right throughout school, just so we know that the kids are getting activity.
Something,
but,
right?
Yeah, I think we just need to be a little more smart about it and get people, you know, get kids moving, teach movement literacy versus kind of these random sports that we tend to teach in the physical education classroom, where we're like, okay.
I grew up in Fort McMurray, and basically every class for gym almost always was floor hockey. All the time. It was like we didn't learn as much of anything else. It was always just, okay, we're playing floor hockey today. It's like, oh, okay. So literacy, I like that, because it's got more of a purpose than just playing a sport, which some kids may not even like.
Right, and that's not to take sports out of high school. It's still go learn the sports, but that's,
well, because literacy is encompassing
a little bit.
Yeah,
that's unstructured. Let the kids go and learn to move. And I think as exercise professionals, we could have a real role to play in helping teach movement literacy to that age group.
Now, here's the big question for you. Would you, and I think I would know the answer because I think we're going to have the same answer. Would you say physical education should have the same value as something as math or any of the sciences?
By same value, how do you mean, I guess?
When you go to school and you have high scores in math, people look at you like, okay, this guy's got a future in engineering and blah, blah, blah. If you look at someone in gym, they're like, great.
Right. So as far as like outside societal value that we're putting on physical education, like, yeah, I mean, I think...
And even academically.
It should be important, but I think we're also looking at, rather than make physical education this category, like say, I think it should be integrated within the actual school system.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes a part of it. So it's not this separate thing. It's actually...
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's actually something we're doing in the schools. And like something like movement literacy is, you know, giving kids the foundation to be able to move well into as they get older into life is critical. I don't care how good you're at math, if you're not moving well and that continues throughout your life, we know where those folks end up when they hit that 55 plus that we're talking about, and that's not such a good life sometimes. So I think we do need to put some some value behind that piece in school.
And on that note, we're just going to take a quick commercial break so you guys can go have a quick power pee, and then we will be right back.
Hello, this is Vijay Prasad with Aspire Higher Health and Fitness. Did you know that we offer a 7-day free trial for our online bootcamps? If you don't know what an online bootcamp is, we'll make it very simple for you because all you need to do is have a little bit of space, some dumbbells, and a Wi-Fi connection. We offer online classes daily, Monday to Friday. Monday and Tuesday, they're at noon. Wednesday through Friday, they are at 7, 8, and 9 a.m. Every day is a different workout, and they are live with a small group. All you need to do is get to that computer screen or monitor, and we'll take care of the rest. If you want to try one of our online boot camps and get that fitness goal achieved, especially starting this coming year, then definitely give us a shout. You can email us, info@aspirehigherfitness.com. Let's book you in and get things started.
And we are back from our quick break. Hope everybody had a good power pee. And Tracy and Dan brought up a good point that you're supposed to yell when you do that to make it go even faster. Can you imagine doing that in public?
Might be fun. Give it a try next time you're at the urinal.
All right, so getting right back into what we were talking about last. So we're going to transition a little bit here now, going from the fact that we were talking about physical education becoming more of a mandatory topic in school for the simple premise of teaching kids, as Dan made that very, very, I find, important phrase of movement literacy. I love that term because it is absolutely correct. It is absolutely encompassing. So it gives us so much more to work with. Now, kids especially being more susceptible and being way more involved in social media, they're seeing a lot of unhealthy body imaging things that are putting in their head at a very young age that they're not good enough. Now, this is everywhere. It's on Facebook, it's on Instagram, it's on YouTube, it's absolutely everywhere. So with what Tracy, Dan, and myself are always talking about is promoting a healthy image. When I say healthy, not just physically, but emotionally. So mentally, emotionally, physically, all of it comes into play. Now, when you see and are constantly bombarded, when I say constantly, especially kids nowadays are constantly plugged in. They're always online. They're always seeing that. So they're getting hammered with it. And I feel that this is an extreme detriment for myself to see kids constantly hit with this because at a young age, they're already thinking in terms of body modification. So when I'm thinking about body modifications, you're seeing kids seeing these unrealistic goals so early that younger and younger, they're doing things like, I need collagen fills, or I need to do my eyebrows, or I need to physically change myself somehow because of something I saw, and are becoming less and less accepting of who they are because of what they're being hammered with through social media. So, and I'm talking about like really cute kids and stuff like that. Not saying that they're not all cute. Well, shit. I guess I am saying some may not be as cute as others. That's not what I mean to say. It's just kind of how it came out, though. But anyway, some kids are like really, really cute, and they're seeing this stuff, and they're like, well, I'm not good enough. And so they're already starting into that body modification thing. And personally, I know of people who have started at a really young age, and we were just discussing this on the break, but the fact that, you know, I know someone, she's 22, and she's already had her lips done, her eyes done. She's had all this work on her face. She's 22. That's an age that shouldn't even be thinking this way, and she's already had all of this stuff done. And going into it a little bit later, but we'll get into this part first, but also how that's going to affect her long term. Because if you start something like that, once you cut, you can't uncut. Once you start that process, you can't really undo it. So do we have such a unhealthy body imaging system coming out to our kids now that it's going to make a massive impact on the future?
Hell yes. It's a major problem. And I mean, social media is the delivery system. These problems have existed for a long time, but now
it's everywhere, though. It's so accessible.
They can catch it everywhere, right? You don't have to buy the magazine anymore to go and look at unhealthy body images on a screen. So this is a huge problem, and it's a big reason I have a real problem with how the fitness industry is marketing itself and playing on insecurities and all the stuff we talked about last episode. Mm-hmm. around rooting people in their insecurities and rooting them in shame, and then having an expectation that if I do this, then I'll be enough, and then I'll feel good about myself. And the truth of the matter, and we're starting to see this, unfortunately, like I say, it's starting with young kids now, is that they do one thing, and then they realize, well, that's not enough. Now I need to do B, and now I need to do C, D, and on and on and on. And the root of the problem is that they're starting this whole process from a place of shame and insecurity, and like say what we talked about last time, from a place of I'm not enough. And that's a real, real problem, especially amongst kids.
And it's unfortunate, but absolutely true. We all know it. But the fact is, they're being targeted. It's not by accident, because who is more insecure than a high school kid?
Yeah.
Right, like it's a plan. They're like, we're going after them because you know you can get them. And as much as if anybody listened to the Momo episode, monitor what your kids are looking at, because it will have an effect. But the fact is, it's so accessible to get on social media that unfortunately parents cannot keep up, and they can't. I'm not saying shelter your kids, but be involved with what they're looking at.
Well, and a lot of this stuff is subtle too, right? It's the influencer culture where you have kids following other kids, usually really wealthy kids who are super privileged have all kinds of, people around them making their lifestyle image look a certain way. And then you have kids who are already insecure looking at these, and they're like, well, I want to be like that. Well, how do I start? Well, I need to look like that, first of all. And then they start down that terrible path of trying to become someone else, essentially, or trying to aspire to someone's BS PR version of themselves on the internet. Like, what a terrible system that is.
And that's like we always say, Instagram isn't people's worst moments, it's the highlight reel. But all these other kids are seeing is the highlight reel, being like, well, why can't I be like that? But that person's not even like that.
Right, yeah. Watching the highlight reel of some 16-year-old spoiled brat who has millionaire parents who are doing everything for them, and your expectations go wild. And then, like I say, then you start looking to these like quick fixes and these ways of altering yourself to become more like that person, because they're living such an amazing life, right?
It's so amazing. Their parents had to bribe the schools to get them on the rowing team and get them into the top colleges.
I'm glad you picked up on that, Tracy. I was thinking, like, it's those kids. It's the Fyre Festival kids, right?
Who was the other one involved in that? Was Lori Loughlin and
Felicity Huffman,
right. That's fades right into what we're talking about right here.
But that's the culture that they're seeing. Like, that's what kids see. And then you look at the Kardashians and the Jenners and their butt implants and their lip implants, and that's what young girls are looking at. And I want, like, it's so pervasive that you can't get away from it. But I think, going back to what Dan was saying earlier and on the last podcast, if we would change the way we promote physical activity and not promote exercise as a chore or as a way to get that perfect body, but promote the fact that, hey, look what I'm capable of, look how much my body can do, then that might help to shift that mindset away from just, I want to look a certain way because that'll get me X, Y, or Z.
See, and I like the idea of, oh, well, Dan, as you know, Tracy, you know, with me, like, I'm very, when I train people, I'm very performance-based. I'm the, let's see what you can physically do. That's how I train people. And to me, that fits very well with that younger population, because rather than focus on what they look like, it's like, who can do the cooler thing, right? To me, that can generate, it still has, that could even lead to its own issues, yes. But at the same time, it leads it down a more healthy path of how can I perform better, not how can I look better, no?
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I agree with you, BJ, and it's incumbent amongst us as coaches to start really, really focusing on our clients' motivations and helping them work through that as to why they're coming to see us. We talked about that last episode too.
Yep. So folks, make sure you go back to the last episode so you kind of catch what we're talking about.
Yeah. So we're talking about the finding the why. So they come in and we ask them why they came to see us, and they usually, from my experience, they kind of give you a BS answer, usually.
The digging portion.
Yeah, I want to get healthier. I want to lose 10 pounds. So we got to narrow that down. But then we need to find out, well, why is that happening? Why are you thinking this way? And especially, if they're young kids, we know they're being bombarded with this BS. So we really, really need to help them. If they're coming to us for exercise and fitness and that stuff, help them get to a place where they feel good about themselves before they even start exercising with us, before they start seeing those changes that we're going to bring to them.
That's fantastic. I like making them feel like they're already in a good place and start from a place of, I'm just bettering myself, not I need to be better.
That's right.
Right. That's, I know that sounds weird, but that's just a simple turn of phrase, really. I mean, it's just phrasing, but the fact is, a person saying I'm bettering myself versus I need to be better, those are very different things.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's you're absolutely right. And not just kids, but even the older population, like we were talking about the plus 55ers and all that, or even just everyone. If you're starting a program, why? Not just the obvious, not just the sugar-coated topping on the cake there, but why is it that you really are starting to train or do more healthy activities or just making yourself healthy? Why? What's the why behind the why? I want to look good, but why do you want to look good? So starting from a place of, I just want to be better versus I need to be better is a very different thing. So everyone, when you're starting something like that, it should be, you should know right off the bat, you are enough. You're just trying to make yourself better than you were yesterday. That's all.
Yeah, and we have to help people get to that space, I think, before we start doing any real work with them, because it's so vital. And, you know, we're talking about kids now, and a lot of this stuff is learned behavior from the parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It extends through generations. This isn't a kid problem. They're learning this stuff from mom and dad, usually. And any young person that I've worked with, most of their insecurities are learned from mom and dad as well.
In other words, folks, everything that's wrong with you, blame your parents.
Well, it's fair because they can blame their parents.
Yeah, that's what I do.
So,
I'm just kidding. I'm totally just kidding, everyone. Please don't believe that I meant that, because I don't.
It's still the personal responsibility that you have to overcome that challenge, right? Whether or not it came from your parents or not.
So. Yeah. Now, what is one of, if what would you suggest as one starting off point to get into that headspace?
Right. Well, some extreme example. Well, I don't think these are extreme examples, but I guarantee if I talk to an 18-year-old or 16-year-old kid, they think it's extreme for them to stop following the social media influencers in particular that they're following on Instagram.
I could be wrong, but I feel like asking a kid to do that, they'd be like, that's like cutting off my arm.
Right.
At this point, this day and age, it kind of is. Like, if you asked your 14-year-old nephew to 100% give up his Instagram.
Well, no, I didn't say that.
So no, but even though they maybe give up their following the influencers and stuff, like, I think that's huge. It's a big step, but I still think there's more to it.
There's a lot more to it. I think that actually giving kids the power to take control over their feed on their Instagram could be an empowering message. So get these crappy messages out of your feed. You're in control of it, of what comes through your Instagram account or your Snapchat account. And that's obviously a small piece of the puzzle, but Vijay, you asked like some tactics. So I think that's an important one, especially if you have some unhealthy obsession with someone that you're following on Instagram.
Mm.
And as we know, some of these Instagrammers aren't necessarily the best role models or sending the messages.
Well, even like what you talked about last time, you brought up an absolutely excellent point in that last podcast, which when you were talking about a lot of people who are posting themselves as trainers and you look at their feed and their feed is pictures of them with their shirts off or them doing stuff, but it's just basically their personal homage to themselves about why they're so great and you should listen to them because of that. Like that's how that kind of thing gets developed for a younger generation looking at that. They'd be like, that guy looks awesome. That guy looks amazing. I want to be like him.
Right. And it's funny because we're talking about people who are touting themselves as health coaches, exhibiting incredibly unhealthy behaviors on social media. And that's not to say everyone who's taking a selfie, it's an unhealthy behavior. It's not the case, but it's when it's a pattern and there's clear, like you say, exploitation and plays on people's insecurities within that message. Now, on the flip side of that, I think there's people on social media that are doing an amazing job spreading a good message and empowering message to people as well, young people and everyone included.
Who would you say are some of your favorites?
I don't know. I don't want to. I talked to Mary Lee's about this the other day. I don't like naming names. I hate call out culture. So I think the reverse of that's just as bad sometimes. So I would suggest people get themselves in a good headspace and go through their own, social media feeds or whatever kind of wherever you're getting your information from, and take a real good look at who you're giving your time to and who you're taking your advice from, and do a bit of an audit of yourself that way. Because whether we like it or not, those people are having an incredible influence on us.
Yeah.
There's a reason they're called the influencers, right? So if we're going to spend a large amount of time on these platforms, it takes some personal responsibility and personal accountability of what we're going to include in our feeds.
And I think that, again, this comes back to the parents too. You're setting the stage. You're setting the map, the blueprint for your kids. So for parents especially, you're going to have to you're going to be going up a little bit of a struggle facing social media, but you're setting for them what a realistic image is. So,
oh, yeah.
And it is true, like, kids are like sponges, especially the younger they are. They absorb everything. So if you're having a bad day and you say something negative towards your kid, they're going to hold on to it. So remembering that, yes, even though you're going to get frustrated with them, the fact is you're the one who's going to be guiding them into something healthier and better and making them a stronger person. So you're going to have to show them what a realistic body type is versus what's on their Instagram feed or what's in their Snapchat or whatever.
Well, that's why it's such a powerful move when parents do take, they start to take care of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And model healthy behaviors and become the actual role model that their kid needs. So that's, we talk to clients all the time, and one of the first things they need to understand is that they need to take care of themselves first before they're able to take care of.
One of my current clients, that was actually, we had her on a little while ago in one of our previous podcasts, but that was one of her big motivations. She works out at home, obviously, because she works out with me through the online program, but she likes to have her kids there so they see her doing it so they can, and sometimes they get on the phone, they're trying to do stuff she's doing, and it's setting that example right off the bat. So everybody's like, whoa. No, but really, like, they're watching this. They're like, oh, look what mommy's doing. Maybe I should do that.
Well, it's impactful. And actually, Tracy, to go back to your comment about the kids now and parents caught up in the college scandal down in the States, right? This just highlights this fact so clear that, the kids have learned these terrible behaviors from mom and dad because they're the ones bribing the institution, and the kid shows up there and thinks they're entitled to be there. It's interesting that one of the kids, I think, was some sort of social media influencer. So there you go.
Yeah.
You got almost 2 million people following this person who's cheated her way into school, is giving all kinds of lifestyle, quote unquote, lifestyle advice. probably not something people should be looking up to.
No. And the sad part is like a lot of them, they probably, they have this influencer status, but it's, they named themselves an influencer. Nobody gave them that title. And they're giving advice that they're not qualified to give. And most kids are taking it as gospel because of where it's coming from.
That's one of the hard parts is you're battling someone who, because they've set themselves on this grandiose stage as an expert when they're not. And, you know, like they've got these, like you said, millions of people are, I'm going to listen to you. When it's like, why? This person has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, suddenly your qualifications become the number of people following you on Instagram, not, and I'm not saying you need a master's degree in something to be an expert. I know people that have studied stuff for years, but never went to school for it. And I would still strongly trust their advice, opinions, any of it. But your numbers on Instagram should not be what qualifies you for this kind of thing.
No. I mean, expertise has to be defined by something much more than who comments on your feed.
Well, and to segue back to last episode again, sorry, but we talked about this, right? In that, I think both sides have a responsibility here. The influencer, quote unquote, yeah, sure, they've named themselves an influencer, but what gave them that social capital was all the people following them.
Yeah, it's true.
And this is why I say, like, audit your feeds a little bit and start take some control and personal responsibility to weed out some of the BS that's out there. And even if you're going to follow these people, stop taking their health and wellness advice. It's insane what's going on.
Especially when proper expertise, proper experience, proper coaches, proper everything is as available as all the bullshit.
Yeah.
There's no difference over how easy it is to access the fake stuff versus the real stuff. But for some reason, which we're trying to figure out here, but for some reason, the fake stuff is winning.
Well, it's because if you play on insecurities, it's a lot easier to convince someone that your quick fix is going to work if you've just rooted them in their insecurity about whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you got an extra 10 pounds on you. Well, guess what? I've got two pills that's going to take that away. Just take them for 30 days. You don't need to change your exercise or diet habits at all. Just take these two green pills. You'll lose 10 pounds in 30 days. And if you're a person who has deep shame about that extra 10 pounds or it's really, really made you uncomfortable, that's appealing.
Yep.
That's
you're
appealing.
Right.
So it makes it a lot easier. That's why I think, you know, all of the amazing trainers and coaches we know, we need to start banging the drum a little louder and start drowning out the bullshit that's out there.
So folks, on that note, we will bring today's podcast to a close. And as always, we want to know your thoughts on this matter, because we went through a lot of stuff between physical health, mental health, physical education, mental education resources. We covered a big gamut of things today, especially how to influence the younger generation to lead them down a healthier path. So where do you land in terms of what you think we need to do to make things better for everyone? Ultimately is the goal here, is to make everybody that much better. And like Dan was saying, rooting it now in a place of a healthier belief in yourself, right? So now, as opposed to, I want to be something more, I want to better myself, not just I want to be like that person, but I want to be a better me. How do we get ourselves into that headspace, that place, and turn things around so that we can start changing the direction of our kids, as well as ourselves, as well as our older generation? Like, all of us need something more. And together we can figure this out, but it's a matter of taking that first step. So definitely, if you have any questions, comments, let us know. info@aspirehigherfitness.com. And we want to hear from you. So definitely let us know. And thank you again, Dan, for joining us today. He's making faces at me is what he's doing right now.
We're not recording the video, are we?
No, just your voice. You're safe.
Oh, thank God.
But thank you, Deb, for joining us again today. So once again, this is Vijay Prasad and
Tracy Abelson.
We are Aspire Higher Health and Fitness. Remember, it's about overcoming, and we will catch you on the next one. Take care, guys. Thanks for listening to our Aspire Higher Health and Fitness podcast. If you do want to find us, you can find us on the web, www.aspirehigherfitness.com, and you can email us, info@aspirehigherfitness.com. Definitely let us know if you want to try that free trial online bootcamp. We are in Mountain Standard Time, and that is going to be run via Facebook. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe so we can continue to help you level up your life. Aspire Higher Health and Fitness, it's about overcoming.